Welcome to a podcast from the EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting connect.educause.edu/podcast or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference presented by Julie Evans, Director of Project Tomorrow. The session is entitled, Tomorrow's Students, Today's K-12 Digital Learners. Are you ready for them?
You know, how do we prepare for the students of tomorrow? What are their expectations? And what are the trends in education and technology that we should be talking about now so that we are well prepared for the future? I love this quote that we just received recently from Chicago Public Schools, the Director of E-Learning Programs, and I want to dissect it a little bit for you. Nick here talks about wanting technology to be almost a thoughtless, seamless process. So that, for example, when you would go into a classroom, you'd pick up a piece of chalk, and the technology should be as automatic as picking up the chalk. The other thing I liked about what Nick captured was that the newer teachers that are coming into our K-12 schools are expecting widespread use of technology, and the students are definitely expecting it, as you already know. In case you're not familiar with the Speak Up Project, what I want to do is give you just a 1, 2, 3 on the project itself as a foundational step. It is a national research project. It's conducted 100% through online surveys, and then the data is verified through focus groups and interviews held afterwards. It is currently focused on K-12 students, teachers, parents, and administrators. And we really set this project up 5 years ago to collect the authentic, unfiltered feedback from students, because what we were sensing in the K-12 school environment was that there was a disconnect between the adults and the students on their use of technology. We've had about 1.2 million respondents altogether, including the teachers, the parents, and the administrators. And it includes not only schools in the United States, but also schools in Canada and Mexico, Australia, and on all of our military bases all around the country. And the key reason that the schools and districts participate with us each year is that we give the data back to them. They get their own aggregated data back to really impact their policies and procedures. We'll talk a little bit more about that. It is facilitated by Project Tomorrow. We are a national education nonprofit group. Our particular focus is STEM education, really looking at the development of 21st century skills in children. So the data that we're going to be looking at today is specifically from our fall survey of last fall, so fall of 2007. FYI for you, Speak Up 2008 opened up on Monday, and when I last checked our numbers, we already had 5,000 surveys in as of this morning. We're aiming for about 400,000 this year. But we had 367,000 surveys that were submitted to us last year. In these survey question areas, learning and teaching with technology, 21st century skills, some Web 2.0 questions, we did a thematic group around science instruction, STEM careers, global competitiveness, very interesting to look at the perspective of students and parents on that, and did a thematic group around emerging technologies in the K-12 classroom. Online learning, gaming, and the use of mobile devices. And we every year ask our respondents this key question. So if you were designing that ultimate school classroom for students just like you, teachers just like you, what's the technology components that are essential in that classroom? We're going to be covering that with you. So what I want to do to get started is to put together a context for you and to look at what are the current forces at work on this K-12 student who is going to be your student tomorrow or in the years coming up. What are the things that are impacting that student currently? And what I'm proposing to you is that there's three core forces at work right now. One is what's happening in K-12 education in terms of the priorities. Millennial attitudes and values that I believe you're all familiar with. You're already seeing the leading edge. They've already been in your own classrooms. And also the idea of a technology-infused learning environment. So the question that we asked administrators last year in our K-12 schools and districts was, what are the issues that are waking you up in the middle of the night? What are the challenges that you're facing? And how are those issues driving your priorities? So from last year's survey, these were the five top things, challenges that are waking up school principals, district superintendents, curriculum leaders, CIOs, CTOs in the K-12 environment. The number one is test scores. We all know about No Child Left Behind. It's totally driving the wake-up issue, shall we say. It's about funding. It's also about communications with parents, and there's electronic component to that in terms of parent involvement in K-12 schools today. Lots of concerns about school safety. what you hear in the media is one thing. What the school principals are dealing with every day is a real concern about safety for students. And then this twin issue of diversity of student population was also tied with the use of technology. So we were impressed to see the use of technology within instruction being one of the top five challenges, shall we say, things that wake up these administrators in the middle of the night. Some of the things that have been happening in K-12 education, you may be very familiar with this either because of your own work with K-12 schools or districts or because you've seen the impact of all of this, is obviously a standards-based education, changing role of education where there's a new emphasis on every child being successful and every child going to college, having many more educator stakeholders involved, parental issues much more involved in K-12 education than they ever were before, and we already talked about the diversity, but really the big sort of seismic change, and I'm from California, so we talk in terms of seismic and faults. You'll hear me use that metaphor quite a bit. A different kind of learner. Now, you've already seen this different kind of learner. I'm going to propose to you that this learner is still evolving, and we're going to be talking today about who is that learner that you're going to see in your future classrooms and what is happening to them right now in their K-12 environment. So in terms of how the millennials want to learn, this may be a review, shall we say, for you. We know they want to learn collaboratively. We know they also are looking for relevancy. They're also looking for the use of technology within instruction. And then in terms of the technology piece specifically, now what I'm going to do is pull from our SpeakUp data. And one point I should have made up at the front, if anyone would like to have this presentation, I've already loaded it onto the EDUCAUSE website as a resource, but if you want to have it for some other purpose or you want me to send it to you, I'm happy to do that. We can do that. So I'd rather have you listen than feel like you need to take notes. What we're going to do today is we're going to be talking about the activities, attitudes, and aspirations of these K-12 students. As I said, I like to look at the fault line, so we're going to look at the disconnects and the differences to some degree between the parents, the teachers, the administrators, and the students. And then I'm going to leave you with some trends and some leverage points that are particularly poignant to higher education today. The big disconnect that we have seen, and we've seen this since the very beginning, but I'm telling you right now, it is widening, is the disconnect between how students are thinking about and using technology in our K-12 schools and the adults that surround them. There is a widening difference between what the students are thinking about and what they're actually using. The K-12 student is telling us that they power down to go to school. They power up when they leave school. It's a different environment. We also have seen disconnects not just between the students and the adults, but actually between students that self-assess themselves as advanced tech users and all other students. When we disaggregate our data, that is the largest difference that we see. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through. Unfortunately, we still see differences in technology use between girls and boys. And also, we see differences between older and younger students. And this is especially meaningful for a higher ed audience. Let me give you a little context here. And some of you, if you've seen me do this presentation before, you may have seen this before. We went and we did some research and we looked at the classroom internet connectivity in our K-12 schools. And that really started in the mid-90s. About 94, 95 is when there was a big push to have internet connectivity in our classrooms, K-12 classrooms around the country. It really didn't hit its tipping point or almost ubiquitous access until 2002, 2003. So really on a nice trajectory, but it took a little while to get there. The students that just graduated this past spring from your colleges and universities were in second grade in 1994. Chances are very unlikely they had internet access really ubiquitously into their classrooms until they were probably in high school. Today's 12-year-olds, sixth graders, were in first grade when it was ubiquitous access. So what's happening is that the students that you are going to see in the next 6 to 8 years are truly going to be the digital natives. You know, we talk about digital natives versus digital immigrants. You haven't seen the digital natives yet, because these students that are in our middle school and elementary school right now are the ones that really have had widespread internet access in their classrooms and at home in their environment around them. So the question I'm posing to you is, which student are your systems set up to support? The students that you're seeing in your classrooms right now, or the students that are 6 to 8 years away? We're going to be talking more about those students that are coming up, those tomorrow students for you, so that you can adequately prepare for those students. So I want to get to know you a little bit better, and I know this is somewhat of a biased audience, so start thinking about if you're from your own tech skills, do you consider yourself a beginner, average or advanced tech user? Now, I don't want to put anybody on the spot, so we're not going to do a raise of hands. We're not going to, we don't have any polling devices here. Don't worry. But what I do want to show you is what the K-12 adults are thinking about. By the main, the teachers, the parents, and the administrators consider their tech skills to be average. Our administrators, school principals, and superintendents think of themselves as a little bit more advanced than the parents and teachers. But by the main, most people consider their skills to be average. Now, I said we were going to do a little audience participation. This is to make sure that you're awake and following the presentation. What percentage of students, middle school and high school students, do you think consider themselves to be advanced tech users? Is it 6%, 24%, or 70%? How many people think 6%? How many people think 24%? How many people think 70%? Okay, and this is absolutely the favorite part of my presentation. I get to say, the survey says. Actually, it's 24%. Now, if we had those students up here, if I had some 6th graders, some 9th graders, some 12th graders, and I asked them about the activities that they were doing using technology, we would all sit here and go, oh my gosh, those kids are so advanced. They themselves think of their what they're doing as just average. They think of it as average because it's a universal experience for all of them. But what I will tell you is that that 24% that consider themselves to be advanced tech users have very different values, aspirations, and behavior. They are a cohort on their own, and that 24% number has been totally flat and fixed for the 5 years we've been doing this. I'm going to tell you more about it as we go through. How do students, what are kids doing in terms of technology use? I like to refer to it as affectionately the big four: gaming, music, communications, and the Facebook MySpace phenomenon. About 2/3 of students kindergarten through 12th grade are doing some sort of gaming. We're going to talk a little bit more about gaming when we get to that section. Number one activity is music downloads across the board. Girls do tend to do more communications than the boys do. And in terms of maintaining a personal website, you can see what the numbers are, breakdown for grades 6 through 8 and 9 through 12. But I will tell you that there's also a solid approximate 20% of students in the middle school and high school years that tell us they are not interested in the whole social networking phenomenon. They don't have a MySpace or Facebook page. They don't want one. Interestingly, when I disaggregate that data and I look at that slice, a profile, they are our advanced tech users. They tell us the interface is not sophisticated. They're not interested in those activities. They've got better things to do with technology. They're a different breed. Coming to a tipping point near you on the horizon, very interesting statistics. We asked the students about their use in virtual worlds, what experiences they had with virtual worlds. We know about Second Life. My high school numbers, about 3% of high school kids have had some experience in Second Life. Grades 3 through 5, 24%. If you have younger students or you're familiar with what's going on, there's something called Webkinz, Club Penguin. There's several different things. Let's think about this. Our students that are currently in grades 3, 4, and 5, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, are getting a rich virtual experience that is unprecedented for their older peers. So when they get to high school and to college, they are going to be well-grounded in virtual experiences. Just be thinking about that. We asked students, what do you do for schoolwork with your technology? These numbers have been pretty consistent. Lots of writing assignments, lots of internet research, some creating of some slideshows and videos. How satisfied are today's students with technology use at their schools? Number one obstacle, filters. Filters and firewalls has been the same number one obstacles that we have heard from students for 5 years. The second one, though, this is the first time we saw this, was last year. Teachers that limit technology use. Here's what the students told me in focus groups. They said, in fact, they had better use of technology at their school, their K-12 school, before we went and trained all the teachers in the use of technology. What the kids are saying is that the teachers, now that they know about the quote-unquote dangers in the internet, are clamping down and not letting the students use the technology to the extent that they have previously. Students also continue to be concerned about all the rules and regulations in our K-12 schools. If you're not familiar familiar with it, generally students do not have access to email, instant messaging, text messaging. I was at a session earlier this week, a K-12 technology conference, and schools and districts were talking about the fact that they outwardly ban cell phones. If a student is found with a cell phone on campus, first response is detention, second is suspension. That's not for using it, that's for having it. That's the type of environment. So when the kids say they power down, it's not just a metaphor. They actually do power down. Students told us what would make it easier for them to use technology at their school is, let me use my own tools and devices. Let me use the laptop that I'm bringing from home. Let me use my cell phone in some sort of an environment. Let me use my iPod to record a lecture. They really are interested in using that technology. So we did, as I said, an exploratory set of questions around this new battleground in K-12, mobile devices, online learning, and gaming technology. I'm going to give you just snippets of each one of these. And by the way, we have a lot more data than what I'm presenting to you here today. I'm just giving you a thumbnail sketch at this point. So in the area of mobile devices, we specifically looked at cell phones, laptops, MP3 players, and we also queried a little bit on smartphones. And so this is a very interesting set of data. I'm going to draw your attention to a couple different things. The blue line represents kindergarten, first, and second graders. Look at that cell phone number. About 38% of kindergarten, first, and second graders have a personal cell phone that they have access to. The number rises from there. Look at the MP3 number. We saw a huge explosion from 206 to 207. I can't wait to see my 208 data in terms of the number of students that have personal access to an MP3 player or an iPod. And then way, way over on the right-hand side is our smartphone or PDA combinations, BlackBerries and Trios. I have to tell you that we made a mistake because we did not ask kindergarten, first, and second graders if they had a smartphone. It was a mistake. So I don't have that data for you. So look at that smartphone number. The green, because I don't have the kindergarten, first, and second, the green is grades 3, 4, and 5. Look at that number. It's about 14%. Now, this is from last year. That meant that they were walking around with a computer in their backpack that wasn't a laptop. And our school, K-12 schools, are not taking advantage of the fact that these kids already have devices. As I said, we just opened Speak Up on Monday. I can't wait to see what this data looks like for this year. Kids want to use mobile devices to support learning in a lot of the same ways that you're probably already thinking about using mobile devices or probably already using them. But this is new battleground area for K-12 schools. Collaborations, communications, creativity, and productivity. And the key point here is, in the K-12 environment, we still seem to be mired in a conversation about technology is about engagement of students. When I query teachers, principals, parents about the value of technology in their students' learning, they talk about the fact that students are more engaged with the use of technology. That is true. However, the students themselves talk in business language. They talk about being more productive. They talk about being more effective, more efficient, being able to collaborate better, being able to have more accurate information. The promise of technology has always been more efficiency and effectiveness. The students actually are speaking that language already. One of the things that I position with a K-12 audience is that we've got to put away the "it's fun and engaging" argument and start really looking at the productivity gains. Let's look about online learning. We quiz students on their experience with online learning. And one of the key findings from this was that online learning was not limited to being school directed. Students, in fact, in middle school and high school were out looking for online learning opportunities totally outside of their school environment, resulting in about a quarter of high school students having had an online learning experience. Lots of interest in online learning, even down to grades 3, 4, and 5, in terms of wanting to have some sort of an online learning environment. Okay, another audience participation moment. What is the number one reason that you think middle school students, grades 6, 7, and 8, want to take an online class? Take a class not offered at their school, get extra credit in a subject, maybe get college credit, work at their own pace, or learn about a subject. What do you think?
D.
I think it's D, A? E. Okay. And again, Julie says, the survey says, middle school is my middle set there. That yellow bar is to get extra help in a subject where they're struggling. The middle school, the conventional wisdom has been, particularly from high schools, is that it's about a class not offered. My school doesn't offer AP Physics. I want to take AP Physics. Or it doesn't fit into my schedule. I'm already taking a heavy course load. Middle school students and the younger students have a totally different orientation. Remember, we talked about that spectrum of digital nativeness. They're coming at this from a different point of view. What the middle school students tell us is that they want to take an online class as a supplement to a traditional class. They want to have the traditional experience in the school with the teacher, but they want the online component, particularly in a class where they're struggling, such as math. They also do want to work at their own pace, and they also want to direct their own learning. And we see that even in the youngest students. Let's talk a little bit about gaming, because this is kind of fun. About two-thirds of students tell us that they are regular gamers. It's about 8 to 10 hours a week. They use a wide variety of devices. We still see a little bit of a gender split in the high school students, but actually in the elementary students, we see no gender split. Some of that has to do with the products that are available. Some of it also has to do with the fact that the more pervasiveness in terms of access. They're using a wide variety of devices, as I said. I pulled up the data for you because I thought this would be interesting, is the split in terms of the devices. So you actually see that the that, for example, the middle school students are the greatest online players, and actually the kindergarten, first, and second graders are doing most of the cell phone game playing. Really interesting. Another audience participation moment, thinking about girls. Which type of device do you think girls are most likely to use for their gaming activities? Is it cell phones, computer games, traditional consoles, handhelds, or the web-based? Anybody have an idea? Okay, so I heard some console, I heard some cell phones. The web-based single user. Okay, again, the survey says it's computer games. So this idea of painting with a broad brush and saying all students are gaming in this way, we know now is a fallacy. We really need to look at their gender. We need to look at their age. We need to look at where they are on the spectrum of digital nativeness to really understand their relationship with technology. Students for a couple years have been saying to us, probably about 4 or 5 years, why can't the learning of science or history be as interesting as a game? Why can't someone create a game that has academic content? The K-12 environment, the educators have been reluctant to bring serious gaming or education gaming into the curriculum. So we actually polled the students and we said, well, what is it? Why are you interested in gaming in a school environment? They said the things that we would expect them to say. Easier to understand difficult concepts. They are more engaged. They would be more interesting to practice problems. The ones I like are these three. It would cause them to go beyond and try new things. They'd see the results of their problem solving and direct their own learning. If you are familiar, if you're a gamer yourself, or if you're familiar with the gaming experience, those three hit right on the gaming experience. What has been interesting in my work with K-12 educators is to redefine for them the concept of failure. In a gaming environment, you have to fail to proceed ahead. Failure is a learning experience, not a punitive experience. And so that's been a head turn for our K-12 educators. The students are already there. They realize that failure is a process. And so for them, quite often, the process of learning is even more important than the end result or the final outcome or content knowledge. It's the experiential process. We, as I said, we always ask our respondents, so if you were designing that ultimate school, what technology would have the greatest impact on your learning? So let's see what our audience thinks here. So we asked the students, which of these would have the greatest impact on your learning? Is it digital equipment? Is it gaming, laptops, access to those email and instant messaging accounts that they can't, the use of mobile devices or online classes? What do you think the students said? Games, I heard some laptops, access to email, instant messaging, okay? C, let's see what the kids said. Whoever said C over here is right. Kindergarten through 12th grade have said the same thing for 4 years. Give me a laptop. It doesn't matter if I disaggregate this data on urban versus rural, suburban, high minority, low minority, Title I schools with high poverty, suburban affluent schools, girls, boys, advanced tech users, beginner tech users. The students all have the same answer. It's a proxy. It's a proxy for having control over their own learning. They look at this as a gateway to controlling their educational destiny. And so to some extent, it's a proxy. We're going to wait and see as we look at our data here this year coming up as well as next year. Is that proxy changing? Are they looking now at the devices in their pocket as being able to give them that same gateway? Just to show you, teachers have actually come along here. The K-12 teachers have come along and are buying into this one-to-one laptop concept. We still see a disconnect on a couple other areas: the use of gaming, mobile devices, online classes, even internet access throughout the school. We still have a disconnect between the K-12 teacher and the student. We asked this question last year. We thought it was fascinating. Thinking about your own school, we asked the students, we asked the parents, we asked the teachers, we asked the administrators, is your school, not the school written up in the paper, not the school that always gets the headlines, not the school on the other side of the country, is your school doing a good job preparing the child for future jobs? What we found out is our school-based principals are the most bullish on their job. 2/3 of them say, yeah, bammo, we're doing it. District administrators, not as much. Teachers, not as much. Parents, not as much. And when I disaggregate for the advanced tech students, less than a quarter of them feel that their school is doing a good job preparing them for the jobs and careers of the future. And when we look at the national call for innovation and the global competitiveness agenda that's based on innovation, particularly around science, math, technology, and engineering, we are leaving an entire generation behind right now. So this is a huge wake-up call for our K-12 schools. I have spent a half hour just on this slide with district superintendents. Let me leave you with, I want to go through a couple trends, and then we'll give you some of these leverage points. And we will have a little time for questions. Some of these are the trends that we're following that we think are interesting. Continuing to look at those digital disconnects, shall we say, those fault lines, that spectrum of digital nativeness. Let's not paint with a broad brush and say all kids are doing this, because we really need to understand what the context is. They're carrying multiple computers in their backpack. The students, as you know, because you're seeing it, are very good at adapting new technologies to new uses. So listening to them and listening to their adaptation patterns are very, very interesting. Self-directed learning is very important. Everyone today is a content developer. And that idea of that process of content development is a key part of this. The students are very interested in the relevancy of their education within the context of where am I going with it? How is it helping me be successful? More of a blending of informal and formal than we've ever seen before. And this long tail of learning, if you're familiar with Chris Anderson's book on the long tail, really a personalization of the educational experience is something that students are interested in. But I have one trend that I want to tell you is what we consider the number one trend. It impacts your future students. It's impacting the current students in the K-12 environment. And that's what we're calling the technology-enabled free agent learner. I want to give you some of the characteristics of this learner. You're already seeing it. I'm going to tell you, you're going to see more of it. Some of the characteristics are they are very focused on self-directed learning. They are untethered to traditional education institutions. They also are experts at personal data aggregation. They can pull content pieces from all different sources and bring it together into a knowledge base that makes relevancy for them. We're seeing that in the students that are involved in online learning. We're also seeing it in their interest in control over knowledge authenticity. I want to tell you a little vignette story. As I mentioned before, I do focus groups all around the country. I did a focus group with a group of sixth graders in June outside of Houston, a suburban district outside of Houston. And we were there meeting with some students in a science classroom, so sixth grade science class. The teacher was there with me. People from the school district were there with me. And I was talking with the students about what they do after school with technology. What are their out-of-school activities with technology? And a couple of the students, and then it started like a snowball, because come to find out they all were doing this, mentioned to me that one of the things that they do almost every day is they go home and they go online and they check to see if the information provided by their science teacher was accurate. Now, I'm standing like I'm standing to you. The kids were like sitting around in a semicircle. Science teacher's right behind me. I'm like, ooh, now I'm in dangerous territory here. But she jumped up. She saved me. She said, no, I know they do that. She said, I encourage them to do that. Now that is a very interesting, she was very enlightened. That's very interesting with the idea that those students, and they weren't saying, oh, I don't trust Mrs. Smith or I don't think she's a good teacher. They took it upon themselves. They thought of it as part of their responsibility to ensure their own personal educational destiny, and that meant going out and getting the information and checking on it themselves. I know that has ramifications in your classrooms. I've been speaking on colleges and universities over the last 18 months about this data, and when I speak to faculty, I get a lot of head nods on that one. Another set of characteristics is the power of connectedness and creating new communities. And once again, this untethered, not being tethered to physical networks. And that's where this idea of using the mobile devices to leverage that. And then this idea of experiential learning, making it real, the content developer. What I said before about the process, the experiential process, being, in many cases, more important than the content knowledge. How do I get from A to B? Will I have the skills to be able to get from B to C? Is more important than understanding what C is. And we see that through gaming and simulations. So the question then is, so what is the impact of this free agent learner on your institution? What is the impact of these emerging trends? And what are some tough questions? And I want to leave you with some of these tough questions because I think they're provocative, and I know that EDUCAUSE is a provocative, thought-provoking type conference. They really revolve around content, culture, competition, and control. So in content, I think we need to be thinking about what is content today and what will define content tomorrow. We need to be thinking of the culture of our institutions. How will these free agents either fit into the existing culture, or are we going to have to create a new culture, or will they be creating a new culture within our academic institutions? Do we need to create new business models for our colleges and universities around these free agent learners? And then who controls the learning process in this new world? Is it student-centered? Is it faculty-centered? Is it a collection of students? Who is controlling that learning process? I know these are tough questions, and we're not looking for answers at this point, but I wanted to leave you with a context of the things that we're thinking about and where we want to go with this. A couple things just so that you have some background, then we'll open it up for some questions. If you want more of our information, it is at tomorrow.org. We have some fabulous reports on our site. We have data findings, and we also have some fabulous reports. We have a wonderful report that we did last year. We did it in collaboration with Blackboard on online learning. We actually did an update in June of this past year, since we had such valuable information. And then we did a report that we also released in June on our science education. You see, I didn't get into any of the science education. So if you're interested in any of that, that's available on our website. And then actually just yesterday, I've been in two different cities this week. Just yesterday, we released a brand new report, again done in collaboration with Blackboard, on leadership in the 21st century, a new visionary administrator. Really interesting report where we were able to identify a cohort of school and district administrators in the K-12 space that actually have more in common with students in their vision about technology than their peers. Really interesting stuff. You want to check that out. I mentioned we did open up Speak Up just on Monday. It is running as an online survey available to schools and districts all around the country until December 19th. It is for K-12 students, teachers, parents, and administrators. Our parent survey is in English and Spanish. Schools and districts that participate will get their data back at the beginning of February. And then we do a big national findings congressional briefing in Washington, D.C. in March. The questions this year will be around, continue to be around learning and teaching technology, a lot of things that we talked about today. But we're also going in a new direction on three major content areas. One is around digital content. Digital content is just starting to have ramifications in K-12 schools. There's a lot of conversation. And one of the things that we are going to have the students do is to design with us an online textbook. What is the features and functionality that they're looking for in an online textbook? We're asking about broadband access and also about information and media literacy skills. A couple things I want to leave you with in terms of some ideas for your participation in Speak Up or your support of Speak Up is that we do have this year some teaching colleges and universities that are going to have their pre-service teachers take our teacher survey. If you are a teaching college and university and would like to participate, please let me know. We would love to have you do that. You then will get that data back from your pre-service teachers, and you can compare that against in-service teachers. Kind of an interesting exercise. I know a lot of you do outreach to your either your regional or collaborative partners in the K-12 space. If you would like to facilitate that, use the data in some outreach workshops, please talk to us about that. And then also, as I mentioned before, I do a number of presentations, workshops, webinars, and also some consulting with colleges and universities that are more interested in getting into more in-depth on who is this tomorrow student, what should we be doing, how can we prepare effectively. I'd be happy to help you with all of that. So why don't we take a little bit of questions? I think we're okay time-wise, aren't we, Steve? We have about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Something like that. If anyone has some questions, I'd be happy to entertain them at this time. Yes, ma'am. As I mentioned, it doesn't matter what question we asked on the survey. And please understand, I really gave you a thumbnail sketch of all the questions that we asked. When we disaggregate the data, we see very little differences between the schools themselves, between urban schools versus rural schools versus suburban schools. But as I said, the most significant difference we see is on that advanced tech student. They have more intensity on the obstacles in their K-12 schools. They have more interest in the emerging technologies, in online learning, mobile devices, the Web 2.0 activities, as you would imagine. Yet, as I told you, they were not interested in the social networking side of things. They tend to be a little bit more biased as boys. Girls still tend to assess their skills in greater numbers as average than boys do. So they are predisposed to be a boy group, but not exclusively a boy group. So we do see girls in that area as well. I'm trying to do this from memory from all my data. I'd be happy to pull some of that data specifically for you or anyone else that was interested in that cohort. Yes, ma'am. Please let me clarify this. This is their own assessment of their tech skills. Okay, so it is a self-perception of their tech skills. We see it follow through because they are the students that are more sort of more forcing the envelope, shall we say, in terms of the emerging technologies area. So we do think it fits in line with that, but we don't know what their background skills were to know that. Yes. We stopped asking the question of parents and teachers because the results were pretty standard. When I do it in focus groups, the kids will actually just laugh at me, whether I'm asking them about their parents or their teachers. They really don't get, they just laugh. And the students will talk about the fact that, particularly with their parents, that they are the first line of support. They are the tech support. They are the ones bringing them through. There actually was my husband and I have it up in our home office. There was a cute little cartoon. I wish I had it. I don't know who the artist or the cartoonist was, but it was something about two parents that were struggling with their computer, and the cartoon was, well, gee whiz, when is tech support getting home from soccer practice? You know? So the students themselves will tell us that they are quite often the teacher, the tutor with their students, with their parents. The difference is with the teachers is that teachers are reluctant to have their students help them with technology. Interestingly, I'll give you one tidbit on this, because we asked a series of questions of teachers a couple years ago about whether they had students, their students helped them when they had technology challenges. It was the older teachers that were more accepting of student help than the younger teachers. Okay, it defies conventional wisdom. But if you understand a K-12 teaching environment, the older teachers have already established classroom management. They can do that with one hand tied behind their back. So they are more willing, shall we say, to give up a little power. The younger teachers that are maybe, you know, particularly in high school, maybe only 6 or 7 years older than their students, they're not giving up any power. And so we actually will see, defying conventional wisdom, we'll actually see older, more mature teachers being much more eager to embrace some of these new technologies than the very younger teachers because of that classroom management component. It's really an interesting myth buster. Yes, sir. The question was about think tanks or research organizations that were focused in on K-12 education technology. There are a number of research initiatives that come from a whole range of different organizations, particularly associations. That are either, like for example, the Teachers Union, the National Education Association, does research on technology. The National School Boards Association does research on technology. Our particular difference is that we are not an association, so we are not tied to members or a particular bias from members. And our particular focus is really on the students' use of technology. But if you go to our website, you'll see our partner list. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I'm going to do a little bit by memory. It basically is was almost a one-third, one-third, one-third with a little bit higher orientation actually from urban. We have about, I think it's 41% urban, and it was like 28% rural, and then the rest were suburban. We have that same number, about 41% are Title I schools, which would be high poverty schools, and then 29% were majority minority schools. We do very specific outreach, particularly in the urban, high poverty, majority minority schools, to make sure that we are mitigating our bias. We have a large number of school districts that participate in the Speak Up survey district-wide, including Chicago and Baltimore, and we always look at their data individually. For those people that are leaving, if you wanted a flyer or if you wanted me to send you the presentation, and for everybody else, you can leave me your contact information or a card, and I'd be happy to send that to you. Yes, sir. We are actually doing that this year with that information and media literacy component. It's fascinating putting the survey together because we always have a fight because we always have a million questions. We work on question development all year long, really soliciting a lot of question ideas from our student advisory council that works with us. But this year we really wanted to focus in on the information and media literacy skills. So we will be asking students which of the different types of skills they think are most important for them, how they acquire those skills, how they authenticate resources. I've been doing some of that in focus groups. I don't know if you're seeing this in your environment, but I'm going to tell you what the students have been telling us how they authenticate resources on the internet. I don't know if you guys have ever heard this before. I don't want to scare anyone. When I first heard this explained to me from a student, I thought it was a one-off, but I have to tell you, I've heard it all across the country. What the students have told me is that if it comes from a .com domain, you don't use it. If it's a .edu, that's good to use. If it's a .org, it's probably good to use. If it's a .gov, don't trust it. Honest to God, when I heard it the first time, I thought, oh, this is just one class, one teacher, one bias. I've heard it all across the country. So we have an issue in K-12 in terms of teaching authenticity of resources. Yes, ma'am. No, we have not. Well, one of the questions that we did ask, which we didn't ask last year, was about concerns. What concerns you about technology use? We asked the students, the teachers, the parents that question. And it was somewhat geared to safety, online safety. But one of the things we had was too much time on the computer and not enough physical activity. Well, that actually did rate highly with the teachers and the parents. It was a non-issue for the students. Was not an issue for the students. But to more detailed of your particular questioning, I have not asked that. Yes, ma'am. It's actually that some of the gaming people have done that research. I think Henry Jenkins at MIT has done some of that, or he knows, or maybe I've gotten some research from him on that. Particularly around gaming, there's that whole Nintendo effect where they've actually looked at brain activity and they see a difference when the students are playing games as opposed to other activities. We have not done anything with that, but I know there's some stuff out there. I think also another group that may have done that with early learners, preschool students, you might want to check out Sesame Street Workshop. They have a new research component of Sesame Street Workshop, and I think they're doing some research along that. We're good? Thank you. Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Outsourced hosting of multi-format digital media content is available from Real's own CDN, the Real Broadcast Network. Information at rbn.com.